Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. This show is heard on WBCQ The Planet every Monday and Thursday evenings, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you can also pick it up on Podomatic, which is like our flagship podcast, Amazon, Spotify, and dozens more. The show is brought to you by Camp Constitution, which, among other things, runs a week-long family camp. And we just held our camp. I did give a report on it on an earlier broadcast. It was an incredible time, another full house. All of the classes for the older teens and adults are on our Rumble page. And also, we do plan to upload them on our YouTube channel. We don't think we're going to have that channel very long, however, but at least we'll have a format for as long as we can. The show was brought to you again by Camp Constitution, and we do have a weekend camp coming up, September 30th to October 2nd. And that will be in Camp Sentinel in Tuftonboro, New Hampshire, just a few towns north of me. And you can go to our contact on our website for more information. You can also go to our I know somewhere there's a cough button, but I didn't catch it in time. Sorry about that. Anyway, we do have a good lineup, as we have for all our programs at the weekend camp. It's going to be $150 per person. Two nights, six meals. Our instructors include Barbara from Harlem, Professor Willie Soon, and Mrs. Catherine White, a constitutional scholar. So we've got a good lineup. We also have an optional field trip to a World War II museum in Wilkesboro. And Camp Sentinel is a beautiful venue nestled in the woods. There's a beautiful pond that we have almost unlimited access to, and it may be warm enough to take a dip. Who knows, in September, late September, but the leaves will be turning, and so I think it'll be a great time. We also had a very big celebration just a few days ago. Of course, if you've been a regular follower, if you were a listener of the show, you know that the Christian flag lawsuit that we won at 9-0 against the city of Boston. And part of the final agreement arrangements was to have a flag-raising ceremony. I didn't think initially that the city would let us do it. They ended up canceling their third-party flag-raising program. But under the old guidelines or the old policy, they clearly violated, and they acknowledged that. Not one city official contacted me, I should say elected official. Obviously, the people in charge of the building management were very, very helpful, went out of the way to be helpful. But not one city councilor or the mayor or anyone else even made an effort to say, hey, you know, we were wrong, and congratulations. But that's to be expected. The city of Boston is not what it used to be. I was interviewed by Dan Ray, who is a very popular evening talk show host in New England on WBZ. And I said this off the air. I don't think I said it on the air. I says, well, no elected officials, but I think the ghost of Dapper O'Neill, or Dapper O'Neill looked down from heaven with a smile. Dapper O'Neill was the very colorful he was a city councilor. I think he was one of the last chauffeurs for James Michael Curley, a World War II veteran, a Marine. And he was a Democrat, but he was very conservative and much beloved. Even some of the liberals liked him, because he was a city councilor at large, which means he didn't have a particular district. And if you called his office, he'd return the call. And he was at every city official, a firefighter. If there was a firefighter who passed away, or a policeman who passed away, retired policeman, no matter what, he was always at the wake and or funeral. That's sort of the old school politician. He really did love the city, and he died about 15 years ago. But he was an interesting guy. I know he would have been in our camp, no pun intended, right along. So we had the ceremony, and Liberty Council, God bless them, they were a big help. They helped get a lot of media there, and it was covered by Associated Press, all of the local affiliates, NPR, and Liberty Council videotaped it. They did a live feed, and you could see that at our on their Rumble page. I tried to download it, but without any success. They also hired a videographer who's doing like a high-level professional job, and that I don't know when that will be. And they're going to do a little outtakes, pictures of the city, things like that. And we had well over 100 people there. Now, this was at 11 o'clock on a Wednesday, August 3rd. We did have one or two detractors. One of them had a very filthy sign, which I won't say what it was. But we handled it, I think, in a firm but loving manner. And you can see, we can hear Reverend Stevie Craft's comments. And we had some great speakers. We raised the flag, Matt Staver and I. Matt's the president and founder of Liberty Council. We raised the two of us, just turned. There was a crank that you turn, and to the sound of Amazing Grace, played by two of our campers, Franklin and Benjamin Soon. And then we had, I spoke briefly, Matt Staver, his Roger Ganim, one of the attorneys who did most of the work, and Harry, another attorney with Liberty Council. And then we had Reverend Stevie Craft. We had Pastor Earl Wallace, Richard Howell, Pastor Levy. And these are all people who've been instructors at our camp. Of course, Reverend Craft was the camp chaplain. Then we had a Buddhist monk. I reached out to the Asian community because I had met some of these folks from various groups that have been opposing the raising of the communist Chinese flag. And I thought it'd be a nice gesture. So he spoke for a little while. And it was interesting, too. Here was this Buddhist monk who was from, I forget what country he was from, but it was, I think, a Muslim-dominated country. And he feels very secure celebrating the raising of the Christian flag in the United States. He said, there's religious freedom we have here. And he said, in communist countries and in Muslim countries, such things don't exist. So he was there to praise our country and our constitution. So, and he heard the gospel as well. So anyway, it was a good ceremony, and we were very honored to be part of that. One reporter said, "What's next?" And I said, "That's all up to the Lord. We're going to keep on doing what we've been doing." And opportunities, I kind of joked with one of the Liberty Council PR. I said, "Okay, who do we sue now?" Actually, to be honest, I hate to say that. I shouldn't have said to be honest. Like I'm not honest before. But to be frank, we had no intention of filing a lawsuit and going on with the Supreme Court. But when the city told me back in 17 that it was a violation of the church and state, I had an obligation to see it through. And God brought Liberty Council. And I said, this was all God's plan from the beginning. And what makes this case very special isn't so much flying a flag one time and having a nice little ceremony and going home, but something called the Lemon Test. The Lemon Test was a terrible Supreme Court decision that came out in the early 70s, I think. And it basically, you had to apply certain things if for religious expression in the government arena, so to speak. And it got to the point where, and I think I read accounts of this somewhere, I can't recall where, but it was a high school principal that said, you can't say God bless you when someone sneezes. And someplace else, you can't bring a candy cane into school because it's shaped like a J, and the J stands for Jesus, and there's a Christian allegory behind the candy cane. And so that the left, of course, they only want their religious expression. Their religion is secular humanism, socialism, Marxism, and they want those religious views expressed, but not Christian views, especially those Christians, traditional Christians, who are what we would call Bible-believing, like us. And interesting, I was on the City of Boston's website, and I learned that they actually have a gospel choir, the City of Boston gospel. I had to do a double take. I have to look into that a little bit more. Last time I checked, gospel means good news. Doesn't have something to do with the New Testament and Christianity. Very strange, very strange what's happening. But now the U.S. Senate just passed, I guess yesterday, this so-called Inflation Reduction Bill. Don't you just love it when the enemies of America, the left, use these euphemisms? It's not just a euphemism. It's an outright lie. Sometimes a euphemism is just, you know, it's salad dressing. It makes something bad look a little tasteful, make it look palatable. But you do not raise money and print more money in an effort to reduce inflation. And I know I touched on this in an earlier show a few months ago, even maybe a year ago. Inflation is a very simple thing. It's not that complicated. It's simply an increase in the money supply. And the problem is a lot of these people have, you know, they think inflation has something to do with the greedy gasoline station owner or the greedy capitalist somewhere or Putin. It's Putin's fault we have inflation. I didn't realize that Putin had that much influence in the United States. I mean, he's responsible for all the bad things. Since Trump's not in office, you got to blame somebody. So it's Putin. That's a lie. Or it should say they're all lies. It's nothing more than the increase of the money supply. Now, let's say, for example, every oil well, for some reason or another, let's say there was every oil well in the world shut down. Well, the price of gas is going to go way up because there's going to be a big shortage. That in itself doesn't cause inflation. But if you print up money and put it into the marketplace, that's what causes inflation. And anything else is just not accurate. And most people just don't know. If you ask the average person, well, inflation is caused by the Democrats. It's caused by the Republicans. It's caused by, there are so many forces that we have no idea what really causes it. But John Maynard Keynes, who was a socialist communist advisor to Lenin as well as Franklin Roosevelt, he wrote a book. It was, I believe, published in 1919, right after World War I. And it was called The Economic Consequences of the Peace. And in that book, he says that, and I'm not quoting it verbatim, but he said that through a process known as inflation, governments can confiscate a vast amount of their citizens' wealth, and not one in a million know it. Well, I like to think more than one in a million know it now. I think back in 1919, I think we had more literate people. And I'm sure there were books on economics that were out there that explained the process. So it was probably more than one in a million. But some of these people were socialists and were more than happy to confiscate their citizens' wealth. So this so-called Inflation Reduction Act is a lie. And it's addressing something, too. They're addressing this thing called climate change. Now, we're in August. August is a hot month in most parts of North America. Here in New Hampshire, in New England, we're having a bit of a heat wave. Now, I'm not sure what the official definition of a heat wave is. It could be more than 2 or 3 days with temperatures in the 90s. Heat waves are not unique, especially this time of year. And this is what the left does. They always try to say, oh, we're having a heat waves and there's a flooding in Kentucky. It's all due to climate change. Well, we had some horrible heat waves in the 1930s. I know a couple of years ago I interviewed Tony Heller, who is a climate historian. And he pointed out how many people died in these heat waves, hundreds and hundreds of people. Now, that was before air conditioning, or it was right when air conditioning was, if it wasn't available, it was new, and most people probably couldn't afford it, especially during the Depression. But so the left is very clever. So they'll tell us about climate change either during a heat wave, and the other time is when they push the climate change fright peddling, is during a very cold snap. And if you say to people, well, it's been minus 10 degrees, this is unprecedented for the whole week, it's never been this cold, they'll say that's weather, that's not climate. But if you've got a heat wave in New Hampshire, in Massachusetts, they'll say that's climate change. It's very interesting how they flip the switch according to their needs and dictates. I responded to a letter. A local person had a letter in the local newspaper saying that, quoting from a report, University of New Hampshire, that we're going to have so many more days over 90 degrees, 30 plus days over 90 degrees. We're going to have droughts and floods and this and that. And all, it's the same old, same old. And I wrote a rebuttal, and I think I'm going to turn it into an article for a few papers that I write. Now, I'm at 63. I'm 63 years old, and I've observed a lot of things in my 63 years. I've met a lot of people. I actually remember as a 7 or 8 year old boy meeting a Spanish-American War veteran. There weren't that many Americans that fought in that war to begin with, meet a veteran, I think that was pretty cool. And I met World War One veterans, a lot of World War II veterans, of course, my dad. And I ask him questions. So you're getting sort of firsthand historical experience when you ask somebody who participated. I got a chance to meet a man who guarded Nazis during the Nuremberg trial. And he came to our camp. He's since passed away. And so he has an interesting insight. And that's, but it's also my own observations. I remember in junior high in the early 70s that we were going to have global cooling because of all the CO2. And we may have winter, we may have year-round winters, starvation, all kinds of horrible things were going to happen because of it. It didn't happen. I don't remember the book Silent Spring. I was only 4 years old when it came out. Rachel Carson had to ban DDT because of it was killing everything. There wouldn't be any more animals. There wouldn't be any more plants. Actually, DDT did a good job of wiping out malaria, but it came back when it was banned. And from what I understand, I've met scientists that said you don't spray it in the field. You spray it around the house. To keep the insects out, the mosquitoes out, and it wasn't wiping the world, the ecosystem out. It was another book based on a lie, and then there was the population bomb by Paul Ehrlich, and I think he's still around, and they still believe him. You know, he's sort of like the secular. There's some people in Christian circles that predict when Christ is going to return and when the world's going to come to an end. Hal Lindsey, for example. Well, Hal Lindsey, if he wasn't a Christian, he'd make a great environmentalist because he's always predicting things that don't come true. So we had the population bomb. And in this book, he said that the seas would be dead by the mid-70s. Well, the seas are better now than they ever have been. They did not die in the mid-70s. Then on the way between global warming and now climate change, we had the ozone hole and what was the other one? Acid rain. Yeah, those two. Now with the ozone, because of CO2s in the atmosphere, I think it was CO2s they were blaming, or was it the aerosols they were blaming, that would all be getting skin cancer. And you know, because the ozone is a layer that protects us from the ultraviolet radiation of the sun. Now, in order to make ozone, you need sunlight. So they were saying, well, in the Antarctic, it's depleted of its ozone. Well, the Antarctic is pretty dark in the wintertime. And I don't see too many sunbathers going down to the Antarctic where it's brutally cold. They get a sunburn or get a suntan. So that was put to rest. And then the acid rain. And this is interesting because, again, being 63 years old and having the honor of meeting a lot of people, one of the persons that I got to know very well, and he was one of our instructors, he passed away, I think, in 15, was Michael Kaufman, Dr. Michael Kaufman. He was the head of something called Sovereignty International. He was author of several books, Saviors of the Earth being one of them, which we have available on our online bookstore. Well, Dr. Michael Kaufman was part of the Acid Rain Participation Project, he was funded by the federal government during the Reagan administration. And his conclusion and a lot of his fellow scientists has said that acid rain is not a major problem. He said what happened was why some of the lakes have higher levels of acidity is because technology made forest fires not rare, but far fewer. And he said because of that, what happened when you had a forest fire, the ashes would go into a lake. And it would alkalize it. It would neutralize the acid or lower the acid levels. Well, since you had fewer forest fires, some of the lakes had reverted back to its high acidic levels. And he said, and this could be, but you could change that without that much difficulty. I think you're adding lime to the water or some other way. And when they presented their findings, they were told, no, this is not what we want. In other words, we want you to say that acid rain is a major problem so we can have more government intervention, more government interference, more laws, more restrictions, and the pay-to-players. I don't know if they used that term back in the 80s, but those people would have, they'd be making money off it. Now, I call this the Green New Deal. I call it the Green Mafia. They are making tons of money. They don't care about the economic and consequences and the physical consequences, social consequences. They're making money. Doesn't matter anything to them. They like the idea. They like it. So there was no acid rain. And I remember, my oldest daughter was 2 or 3 years old. And we used to go to a little pond called Turner's Pond in Milton, Massachusetts, which abuts Boston, somewhat of a upper middle class, a wealthy community. It's where George H.W. Bush was born in Milton. And so I put on the news one day, and there's the governor at the time, Michael Dukakis. He's the guy that ran for president and lost, thankfully, although Bush wasn't much better. And he gave a press conference, and he said, acid rain has killed the fish in this pond. Now, it wasn't a big pond, and I think it was a spring-fed pond. And I thought, oh, that's terrible. What a shame. You know, we got to do something of it. A few months later, I went to visit that pond, walked around it, and I saw people fishing, catching fish. In other words, we were lied to. It was a lie. And of course, Dukakis didn't give a press conference and say, gee, I lied. Or, I didn't lie, I got bad information. Hey, okay, we'll grant you that. Everybody, we get bad information. And, you know, I say it over the years, I've said things that weren't true, not because I was trying to lie. It was an error of fact. I've been telling people that the first Article 5 application ever was New York State, and that was incorrect. Somebody pointed out that it was actually Virginia, and it was a few months, like 4 or 5 months different, and it was a resolution for the same reason, or not that you can limit it, an Article 5 convention. And the reason why I thought it was the first is because John Hancock had addressed it in a circular letter. So it's possible that John Hancock didn't know either. But you just go online and find a list of Article 5 resolutions, and you'll see New York was the first one. And then, Virginia was the first one, and New York was, I think New York was in 1780. The Constitution had been ratified, but the new Congress hadn't even settled in yet, which was legitimate. They could do that. I believe they could do it. I've made errors of facts, but I try to correct them when I can. Sometimes you just give a wrong date. Not that it's a major deal. So I could say that, hey, Michael, you got some bad information. Whoever, maybe you had an overzealous member of your administration, and they just heard something and wanted to believe it. But no, he never came back and said I was wrong. John Kerry, I remember, was pointing out dead trees on, it was a mountain in Vermont, and he said it was acid rain. Well, it was actually bugs. Bugs do a damn, and trees do die. It was another thing too in Vermont. I remember picking up the Boston Globe, that horrible newspaper, and there was an article. This is probably in the mid 80s, and they said in this article that the maple trees were dying because of acid rain. It did went on to say some of these trees are so old that they have tomahawk markings when the Indians dominated the landscape there, and they tapped the trees with their tomahawks. The Indians are the ones that showed us that you can get this sweet stuff from this maple tree. At least that's what I understand. And I thought, oh, that's a shame. Then I was up in Vermont in the early 90s, and I pick up a local newspaper, and it said the largest maple syrup crop in the state's history. And where did I come from? The U.S. Department of Agriculture. And I thought, wow, if all the trees are dying, then how can we have the biggest crop? So that was another lie. And it did mention that trees, these old trees, well, maple trees do die, just like every other tree dies. They have longer lifespans that we humans, but they will die eventually and for different reasons, not because of acid rain. So here we are supposed to spend billions and billions and trillions of dollars to address a non-issue. And that's the same with climate change. But even if the climate was changing because of man-made CO2s are so infinitesimal in the overall that even if we reduced everything to zero carbon, it would have almost no impact on climate change. But the left, it's all about power. It's all about money. And there are some true believers. There are some people out there, Greta Thunberg, she believes it. And she's become a basketeer. And she's an angry young woman. Was a little girl. Now she's a young woman. I think she's 19. She believes this stuff. And her parents drilled this into her. Of course, she's making a lot of money out of it. So maybe she's sincere when she goes out there and says, how dare you? But she does contradict herself. We were told that we have 12 years before we all burn up. And that was about 8 years ago. This was AOC. Of course, Al Gore said, we're all going to die. He said that back in the mid-90s, and we're still here. So all of these scare tactics and alarmists, it's interesting. I know our professor Willie Soon did a history of these scares and how they come. And they don't come back and say, gee, I forgot. I was wrong. They just keep on scaring us. It's like, I think it was Harold Campy. He was a pastor that had a show on radio, and he would write a book, 96 reasons why Jesus is coming back in 96. And then a year later, 97 reasons. This is a joke. And I said, well, the first reason is he didn't come back last year. You know, some the believers are just so they just want Jesus to come and get out of this world that they'll look at anything to see if it's backed up by scripture. A war in the Middle East, a certain person coming to power in a certain country, that's the Antichrist. And they've been making these predictions and, quite frankly, looking silly and foolish. I was wrong because of this and because of that. But I'm going to get it right one of these days. And but problem with at least that most people aren't terribly affected by it unless they sell their home and head up to the mountains. But with this, it's going to destroy our economy. It's going to enrich it. In fact, and these solutions, wind turbines and solar panels, these are false solutions. Battery powered cars, they're a terrible drain on the environment. You think these batteries are made from fairy dust? They use heavy metals and hazardous waste to go into these batteries. And all the battery does is it just stores power. It doesn't generate power. It just stores power. These wind turbines, and I just heard a gentleman on a radio show, and he had a better, I mean, he was adding, he said these, they cause, there's rain, there's more humidity near the turbines, and then causing less humidity so many feet away. The stuff I even haven't heard about, but just these wind turbines there, you have to put tons and tons and tons of concrete to set them in because they have to withstand terrible winds and all kinds of weather and everything else. And then you have to clear cut, make transmission lines. And if it's too windy, you shut them down. If it's not windy enough, of course, they're useless. And many, many other problems with the solar. And by the time they pay for themselves, you got to replace them. The blades fall off. They catch fire. They kill all kinds of birds. And the solar panels, they most of them made in China. They take up beautiful arable fields. And make them, and it's hazardous stuff comes off them as it rains. Just all kinds of issues with these things. But people are making tons of money off them, and that's really the bottom line. Well, we only have about 30 seconds left, but I want to thank you for listening. I also want to mention, you may have heard a few shows of mine with a Catching Fire. There's a TV, there's a new network called Catching Fire News, and we have a program on it, and there are times when I'll turn the video into an audio and upload it here. I do it once a week like this show. So some of the shows will have Catching Fire and Camp Constitution Radio. This time I'm just doing my solo. But just go to catchingfire.news and sign up and you will get our show. Well, thank you for listening, folks. And until next week, may God richly bless you.